Power Records presents...
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Power Records Podcast, where the action comes alive. I am one of your hosts, Rob Kelly from AquamanShrine.net, and joining me as always is my regular co-host, Chris Franklin from Supermates Podcast. Chris, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, buddy.
Thank you very much. Like I said, we are back for another episode, and of course, this is going to be a Christmas-themed episode, as you might imagine. But before we get into all that, we are going to thank our sponsor, In Stock Trades. This episode of the Power Records Podcast is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. In Stock Trades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 45% off with free shipping for orders of $50 or more. One of the deals you can find at InStockTrades.com is, Chris, well, you go first.
I have the Bionic Man Volume 1, Some Assembly Required. This is from the recent Dynamite comic series. And I'll just let In Stock Trades, or probably Dynamite, describe it. It says, "We can rebuild him. Steve Austin is back, and acclaimed filmmaker Kevin Smith unleashes his high-octane vision in this new series from Dynamite. Smith unleashes the Bionic Man into the 21st century as only he can," with probably a lot of, you know, bodily fluid jokes, "with an innovative take on the on the classic character that will show you the Bionic Man with a whole new set of powers and abilities, not to mention enemies. Kevin Smith is joined by Phil Hester, artist Jonathan Lau, and cover artist, character designer Alex Ross, the team that brought you the new Green Hornet series. This trade paperback collects the entire critically acclaimed 10-issue story, along with a complete cover gallery. The retail price is $29.99. In-stock trades price is $20.99. You save 30%.
Good deal. I am following up with that with Bionic Man Volume 2, Bigfoot. This is a description of Steve Austin, the unstoppable hero of the $6 million man, tracks a deadly conspiracy to foreign territory where he discovers his strangest adversary yet, the legendary Bigfoot. What is this unnatural creature of primal instincts and mechanical parts? What role does the Bionic Man play in the monster's origin? If one such Bigfoot exists, could others still roam the wilderness or be manufactured in an assembly line? Also, Steve Austin has a tearful reunion with Jamie Summers. How will he react when he discovers a terrible truth, that he may have been unwittingly been responsible for the tragic accident that transformed her into the Bionic Woman and erased her memories? Writers are Phil Hester and Aaron Gillespie. Artist is Edgar Tadeo. Cover artist, Alex Ross. This cover is great. It's this giant thing of Bigfoot attacking Steve Austin. You can't beat it. 168 pages. Normal price is $19.99. In-stock trades price is $13.99. That is 30% off. So for these and all the other trade paperback needs, visit InStockTrades.com, and we thank them for their support. Awesome. So as you might imagine from the ads that we just ran, this episode is going to focus entirely on the $6 million man. We're going to do something a little different this time because we have not one, not two, not three, but four Christmas-themed Steve Austin $6 Million Man audio adventures to listen to. So we're going to run them all in a row, and then at the other side, Chris and I will come back and talk about them all at one time. The stories in this case are Christmas Lights, Elves Revolt, The Kris Kringle Caper, and The Toy Maker. So sit back and enjoy, and we'll catch you on the other side.
At the headquarters of the Air Defense Command, the watchguard of the United States Security Against Enemy Attack, a strange radio message has been intercepted. Unable to decipher the highly sophisticated code, experts have forwarded the message to the Office of Scientific Intelligence in Washington.
Steve, I'm glad you could make it.
No problem, Oscar. I'm staying in town for the holidays.
Steve, the Air Defense Command in Colorado Springs picked up an unusual radio message the other day on a restricted frequency.
No identification codes?
That's part of the problem. All messages received over the defense network are preceded by an identification code, and they are followed by a second ident code before signing off.
And this communication has no code on either side.
They can't even decode the message.
What are we going to do?
It defies analysis, Steve. As a matter of fact, nothing on record as language or numeric code is anything like it. I've called in Dr. Landis.
Ethel Landis?
She's the top expert in the field of coded communication.
And she has a lot of kooky ideas, Oscar.
I know, Steve, but we can't afford to overlook any possibilities.
Dr. Landis is here, Mr. Goldman.
Thank you. Please send her right in. She's here, Steve.
Hello, Oscar. It's been a long time. And Colonel Steve Austin, what a pleasant surprise. You're really calling out the troops, Oscar.
Yes, well, have you gone over the information I sent you?
Yes.
And have you reached any conclusions?
Yes, I have, but...
Well, don't keep us in suspense, Dr. Landis.
Please, Steve, call me Ethel. Oscar, this may seem far-fetched, but my observations are based on carefully computed data.
Well?
Do you know what a supernova is?
An exploding star.
That's correct, Steve. In this case, we are talking about the sun of a solar system similar to ours.
I don't see...
It's really very simple. Approximately 2,000 years ago, a large star appeared in the sky over the Middle East. Many scientists believe it was a supernova.
What does this have to do with the radio messages?
You won't believe this.
Try me.
Okay. I believe the messages are the final words to come from that solar system before their sun exploded.
If that's true,
millions of people believe that was the guiding light to Bethlehem.
It was. And that is why it is imperative to decipher the message.
You haven't done that?
I can't. The radioactivity in our atmosphere is cutting down the reception. The only way to get the entire communique is to send someone up into space above the radiation belt.
Looks like I've been elected.
2 days later at Cape Canaveral, Colonel Austin and Dr. Landis are in the forward stage of a Titan rocket awaiting takeoff.
I didn't realize you were going to join me, Doctor.
Someone who is familiar with intergalactic communications had to go.
Do you really think that this may be some sort of Christmas greeting?
It's the only thing that makes sense.
15 seconds, Steve.
All systems show green for go. Fuel positive, safety breakers on, escape mode is armed.
5, 10, 9, 8, 8. Main stage. 4, 3, 2, 1.
Predestined orbit for receipt of communication.
You are cleared for orbit climb, Voyager. Adjust speed to 1,200 knots. Roll to 45 degrees left.
Roger, Houston. Rolling to 45 degrees port. Speed to 1200.
I'm starting to receive the message, Steve.
I'll turn on the recorders.
Steve, we show a trouble light down here.
My panel is clear, Oscar.
Everything seems fine.
Check your guidance system. Left end gyros.
Still negative, Oscar.
We show trouble indicators. Voyager 1, come in. Please, Steve, come in.
Houston, this is Voyager 1. We show trouble status on forward guidance system. Vessel is out of control. We've been struck by space debris. Outer hull is shattered. I can't hold course.
Voyager 1, this is Houston. Do you read? I repeat, Voyager 1, this is Houston. Do you copy? Steve, Dr. Landis, please answer.
Houston, this is Voyager 1. Do you read? Oscar, come in, please. Come in.
It's no use, Steve. The radio's dead. What happens now?
We drift.
For how long?
Until the end.
There's nothing to be done, even with your bionics?
I'm afraid we're helpless.
I thought the radio was dead.
It is. I don't know what we're receiving.
It's coming directly through. It must be the alien message.
Then you must be right. It did originate out here.
Let's see if the recording equipment is still working. It still works.
Let's get it on.
The entire cycle takes about 25 minutes.
At least we got what we came for. Now if we could only get home.
I have the entire message recorded, Steve. I wish I could get back to my lab to decode it.
Ethel, do you think the gyros blew out because of a power overload when we were struck?
That would seem to be the only likely explanation.
Which means that a boost of high voltage energy into the power system should start the emergency power.
It might, Colonel. What are you suggesting?
My bionic power source linked to the ship's system might give us enough power to ignite the guidance relays and resume radio contact. Then they could bring us down from the ground.
But what will that do to you, Colonel?
That's a chance I'll have to take.
Colonel! Colonel Austin. Steve, are you all right? Steve, answer me.
Voyager 1, do you read? I repeat, Voyager 1, come in.
This is Voyager 1. Colonel Austin is seriously injured. Please bring us home.
With radio communication reestablished, ground control brings the Voyager 1 safely back to Earth. Steve Austin is sent to the special OSI facility for vital treatment on his bionic system.
Dr. Floyd Jones, 200. Dr. Floyd Jones.
Hey, buddy. Merry Christmas, and welcome back to Earth.
It's good to be back.
That was a smart idea, plugging yourself into the ship's electrical system.
It was a miracle.
That's not the only miracle, Steve.
What did you find, Ethel?
It's very exciting. I've decoded the message.
What does it say?
First, let me say that I think it is from a solar system that no longer exists. It might have been a warning sent out by the inhabitants of the system when they realized their sun was going to explode.
You mean the supernova?
That's right, Oscar.
What was the message?
As close as I can interpret, it says, prepare for a new day.
That's all?
Yes. But what is really ironic is that the message is just reaching us now.
What do you mean?
My original theory was right. The supernova occurred exactly 2,011 years ago, on the first Christmas Eve.
Who was talking about miracles?
Is the most desolate, forbidding landscape on the face of the Earth. But that has not stopped men from wanting control over that vast flow of snow and ice. But only one man has succeeded in setting up a comfortable home and a thriving business.
Ho, 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 ho. Come on, fellows. Let's get back to work.
Not until we discuss a change in the working conditions.
Curio, since when do you speak for the others?
I'm the foreman. We demand a higher salary and better hours.
We can discuss that after Christmas. We only have 6 days left until delivery, Christmas Eve.
That old routine won't work anymore, Santa Claus. We have to earn a decent living. No pay increase, no work.
Then I will hire other elves to finish the toys.
No, Santa, you won't do that either.
And just who is going to stop me?
I will.
This craziness! You're destroying my toys! Who is this madman?
I am Rabbit, and I am here to make sure no one crosses the picket line.
In Washington, at the headquarters of the OSI, Office of Scientific Intelligence, Steve Austin is conferring with Oscar Goldman.
Oscar, what is so important that I have to interrupt my Christmas vacation?
I'm sorry, Steve, but we have a very serious situation on our hands.
And, of course, only I can handle it.
You should be flattered, Steve. You're my best agent.
I would trade that honor for some time off during the Christmas holidays.
Steve, I received a call from the National Weather Service early this morning.
I didn't know they were part of the Defense Intelligence System.
They most certainly are. We need them for satellite reports, weather forecasts for the Air Force.
I get the idea, Oscar. What's the problem?
The polar ice cap at the North Pole.
Don't keep me in suspense, Oscar.
It's melting, Steve.
You can't be serious. The North Pole melting?
According to my calculations, the temperature under the ice is rising at the rate of 1 degree per hour.
How much time does that leave us?
If the rate of thaw continues at its present speed, the entire northern hemisphere could be under 2 feet of water by Christmas Day.
That's only 5 days from now.
Steve, you must get up to the polar region immediately. You can function without worrying about the weather conditions.
Are there any leads, Oscar?
Just this. We've discovered certain areas are giving off artificial heat. We've been able to pinpoint some of the generating points from our satellite sensors. I suggest we try those areas first.
What do you mean, we, Oscar?
I'm going with you.
Later that morning, on an Air Force jet streaking north to the polar ice cap.
Oscar, do you have any idea who might want to melt the ice cap?
No, I don't. I checked with the Defense Department before we left. There are no reports of enemy action in this sector.
What do the computers show?
We drew a blank there, too. Red light. We're almost at the jump site.
Jump site? jump site.
Steve, you're a pilot. You know we can't land on the ice.
Oscar, you didn't tell me about this.
It's too late to argue about it now. There's the green light. See you on the ground. Don't get your feet wet.
After landing on the cold Arctic surface, Steve and Oscar unload the gear they need to find the heat source.
Let me handle the heavy stuff, Oscar.
You never cease to amaze me, Steve.
We, too, are impressed by your great strength. No, do not move. You are covered.
Who are you?
That is none of your business.
If you're going to point that machine gun at me, I would say it's my business. Oscar, I think we can rush this guy. Careful, Steve. He may be trigger-happy.
No talking! You are to only answer my questions.
My friend and I are here on a natural history expedition for the National Scientific Guild.
Enough of this nonsense! You are spies! Scientists do not parachute out of U.S. Air Force planes! What is your mission here?
We came to see Santa Claus. He's right behind you.
Where?
Now, Oscar.
After landing on the Arctic terrain, Steve and Oscar were accosted by the enemy agent Remmert at gunpoint, captured and locked up in an old warehouse.
Is the wound serious, Oscar?
I don't think so, Steve. Looks like a scratch.
Where are we? It's a warehouse of some sort.
Look at these boxes. Why, they're loaded with toys.
Oscar, you don't think... Hey, who's that?
Well, I'll be. No, he doesn't really exist.
Who doesn't exist? A fat man with a white beard?
Who are you?
What is the world coming to? Is TV destroying everything? I repeat, I am a fat old man. I have a white beard and a warehouse full of toys, and this is the North Pole.
Oscar, there is a Santa Claus.
They'll never believe this in Washington.
They'll believe anything in Washington, Mr. Goldman and Mr. Austin. Pardon me, Colonel Austin.
How do you know who we are?
From up here, I can see everything. Could we strike a deal in some Bionic Man dolls? I think it would really help business.
Maybe later, but first tell us what's going on here.
It started out as a labor problem. My workers...
You mean there are elves, too?
Sure, I can't afford full-sized people. They eat too much.
Go on.
Curio, my foreman, organized a strike and called in this gun-toting terrorist, Rama, to be his enforcer. And they locked me up in here.
But why is he trying to melt the ice cap?
To put the heat on. If he floods out my warehouses by Christmas, I won't be able to deliver any of these toys.
Not to mention what he could do to the entire world.
We'd better hurry. There are only 2 days left until Christmas.
Santa's warehouse, Steve and Oscar have to figure out a plan to return Santa to control of his toy manufacturing colony. First, they must disarm the terrorist, Remmert.
Getting Remmert's gun shouldn't be too difficult, but we have to help Santa get his elves back to work.
I don't know how to do it.
You might give in to some of their demands.
Never!
Why not? Haven't they worked faithfully for you?
Yes, but this last act was unforgivable.
I'll agree they went overboard, but give them a chance.
48 hours, my group will control the world. Major cities will be underwater, and you will all be dead.
Pretty sure of yourself.
I have planned this operation very carefully. Those stupid elves provided the perfect cover. They, too, will soon be prisoners.
Oh, no, we won't. Don't move.
Where did you come from?
I suspected you all along, traitor. I'm sorry, Santa. I should have trusted your judgment. Drop your weapon, Remmert. I have an L5 laser pistol in my hand.
You won't take me!
It's all over, Remmert. You're coming back to the United States to face trial.
First, he's going to tell us where the heat generators are located.
Never!
Let me handle this, Colonel.
He's all yours.
As I was saying, Remmert, before the little skirmish which just took place, this is an L5 automatic laser pistol. It will cut you in half in a matter of seconds. This is your last chance to talk.
I'll tell! I'll tell!
Later. later, after all the heat generators have been cleared and Oscar has seen that the temperature is falling back to normal, he and Steve prepare to leave with their prisoner.
I don't know how to thank you, gentlemen.
Well, I hate to ask for anything, but I'm sure my office would like to analyze that automatic laser pistol.
Of course. And we will give one to Colonel Austin so he will have something to play with.
You mean it's a toy?
One of my best.
With only 7 shopping days left until Christmas, Colonel Steve Austin suddenly remembers he has not bought any gifts for his friends and relatives. He decides to go to Geffner's, the large department store downtown.
Can I help you, sir?
Yes, I'm looking for something in perfumes.
Any particular fragrance?
I thought you might be able to suggest something.
Well, there certainly is a large variety to choose from.
I can see that. What's all that commotion about?
That's where the store Santa Claus holds court. Probably some kid didn't get what he wanted and is registering a complaint.
Sounds all serious to me.
Hey, stop that, man. He stole my Christmas present. Hey, you, stop!
Watch it, mister. This is a crowded store. Someone could get hurt.
Sorry, pal. I'm in a hurry.
I understand. Christmas rush.
Yeah, well, I gotta run.
Hey, mister, give me my Christmas present.
Go away.
Give it to me.
Come on, kid. Go away.
What seems to be the problem?
He stole my Christmas present. The one that Santa Claus gave me.
Look, pal, she's my daughter. I wanted to surprise her. Now she's gonna ruin the whole thing.
He's not my father. Give me my present.
I think you better give it to her.
Get out of my way.
Put that gun away. Someone could get hurt.
Not if you leave me alone. Now stand aside. I'm walking out of here.
Oh, you're not.
Later, at the Office of Scientific Intelligence, Colonel Steve Austin is in a security conference with his boss, Oscar Goldman.
Good thing you called me in on this, Steve.
When I grabbed that guy, he dropped the package and it broke open. I could see the thing inside was no ordinary Christmas present. That's why I picked it up and got it to you.
Steve, you seem to have a talent for finding trouble. But in this case, you may have stumbled on a major espionage ring.
An espionage ring?
Steve, the man you fought with in the department store is Harrison Fredericks. For a long while, he's been known to be a free agent in the espionage market, selling his services to the highest bidder. But what is even more interesting to us is what he was carrying in that package.
What was it?
It was an electronic fuel cell for our latest attack missile, the SYR-9.
The SYR-9? I thought that was out in California. No one is supposed to know about it.
Someone does, Steve. And I have an idea how we can break this ring.
I'm all ears.
I'm going to need you for this. I don't mean to put you in an awkward position, but I don't have any other way to go about it.
Break it to me gently, Oscar.
Steve, after Fredericks was arrested, we suspected that the man playing Santa Claus at the department store was being used as a go-between for moving the stolen parts.
Did you bring him in?
About 20 minutes ago. He's clean, Steve. He doesn't know a thing. He probably wasn't involved at all. Just gave out the gifts to kids in line.
Which means a dead end.
Not necessarily. If he were to take a few days off and be replaced by another Santa who could keep a trained eye on things, we may get lucky.
Who did you have in mind?
Why, you, of course.
Mr. Maris?
Yes, who are you?
I'm Steve Austin, the new Santa Claus for the toy department.
I can't see why I hired you. No belly, no beard. You need a total makeup job. I don't know whether or not you'll be convincing.
The man in the office upstairs said to report to you.
Yes, I see.
Where do I change?
In the locker room at the back. Yours is number 13. You'll find a red suit and beard in the locker.
Thanks.
This is Maris. We may have some trouble. No, a new Santa Claus. The other guy got sick or something. No, I just think that it's strange that this new guy shows up after that guy, Fredericks, gets arrested. I don't know. He may be an undercover agent. He doesn't look like a professional Santa Claus. Yeah, well, if there are any problems, what should I do?
Are you sure? I've never done that before.
Yes, sir. Goodbye.
I think I need some more padding around the middle.
Well, let's fix that beard first. Here we go. Not bad. Not bad at all. Now, just go out there and hand out the gifts. Make sure you take them from the pile on the left.
On the left?
Yeah. And don't get it confused, or you may be out of a job.
Hey, don't I know you?
Of course, everyone knows me. I'm Santa Claus.
There's no such person as Santa Claus.
Then who am I?
I think you're the man who was here the other day, the one who tried to get my present back for me.
I'm Santa Claus.
I told you there's no such person.
Then what are you doing on my lap?
I want a present.
But you got one the other day.
No, I didn't. The police took it. I want another one.
Okay, here you go.
No, I want it from that pile.
Those are for later. I can't give you those now.
Santa, that's quite all right. Give the little girl a gift from the pile she wants.
I thought you said...
Just do as I say.
Hello?
Oscar, it's your favorite Santa Claus.
Steve, how are things going?
I think I'm onto something, Oscar. Do you remember that little girl who accused Fredericks of stealing her present yesterday?
Yes, her name was Sandy.
That's right. She came by again today for another gift. The boss of the department, Maris, insisted that I give her a box from a different pile of gifts.
What do you make of it, Steve? Could the child be involved?
I'd hate to think so, but at this point I think we have to consider every possibility.
Get back to me as soon as you need the troops.
I will. Goodbye, Oscar.
Don't turn around, Mr. Austin. If you make one move, it'll be your last.
I don't understand.
I have a revolver pointed at your back, and I'm an expert shot.
Listen, Mr. Maris, I like a joke as much as the next man.
This is no joke, Mr. Austin. I suspected from the very beginning you might be an undercover agent. Now, my suspicions are confirmed. I heard every word of your telephone call.
Then you are the man behind the espionage ring.
No questions, Mr. Austin. Therefore, no answers.
Which means you don't know who the head of the outfit is. I didn't think you had the brain power for the job.
Enough of this. I don't have to listen to anymore.
I'll bet you get from every side. But tell me, where does the girl Sandy fit into this?
She knows nothing. She just serves as a messenger.
That's a great job for a kid of her age.
Quiet! You've spoken your last word. I have no alternative. I must kill you.
Don't be a fool, Maris. Federal agents are surrounding the building right now.
By then, it'll be too late. Goodbye, Mr. Austin.
Are you all right?
Just fine, Oscar. Our man here isn't the top of the line.
Don't worry about that. I had a hunch you might need help, and I had one of our men on the scene. He followed the little girl out of the store, and she led us right to Mr. Big. And we grabbed him, just as she handed him another one of the missing fuel cells, wrapped up in a Christmas package.
And I guess that ties it all up.
Looks that way.
Wait a minute. There's one more thing.
What's that, Steve?
I owe a little girl a Christmas present.
Christmas is a time of universal joy. All men, no matter what field of endeavor they pursue, feel the spirit of the Yule season. That is, all men except Fritz Koenig.
I'm sorry, Fritz, but I can no longer use you. We've become automated.
But, Mr. Danzer, I'm a master craftsman. You have said that I am the best toy maker in the world. Why, no one can turn out the quality of work that I do.
That's true, Fritz, but you take too long. I need quantity, not quality. I have inventories to fill, profit margins to maintain. This is a business, Fritz.
But my new invention, the duplicator. You said it would help things along.
I'm sorry, Fritz, but our tests were conclusive. The duplicator cannot produce a high-quality duplicate toy.
You said you were not interested in quality.
Well, what I meant was...
Give me my machine.
It's worthless, I tell you.
Then give it back.
No.
Return my invention, I'll kill you.
Get away from me, old man. Jerry, get in here. I have something for you to get rid of.
At the headquarters of the Office of Scientific Intelligence, Chief Oscar Goldman is in a meeting with Colonel Steve Austin.
Steve, I've got a strange one here. I'm not sure what to make of it.
Tell me about it, Oscar.
The local police found a badly beaten elderly man in an alleyway early this morning. He was barely alive when they brought him into the hospital.
How is he now?
It looks like he's going to make it.
Since when are we interested in characters found sleeping in the street?
This particular character was Dr. Fritz Koenig.
I don't recognize the name.
Not too many people know of him. He immigrated to the United States before the Second World War. He was a specialist in molecular structure.
What was he doing in the alley?
We don't know, Steve.
Is he out of work? Did he suffer from exposure? It gets rather cold this time of the year.
All the indicators point to foul play, Steve.
My sources inform me that Koenig has been working as a toy designer for the Dancer Manufacturing Company for the past 10 years.
A toy designer?
Yes. Officially, he had dropped out of sight, but we felt he was important enough to keep tabs on.
What do you want me to do, Oscar?
I've got a feeling that Dr. Koenig is back doing his old work in molecular structure, and someone is trying to steal it from him. From now on, he's going to be covered 24 hours.
By me?
Not just yet. First,
I know the first stop is a Dancer Manufacturing Company.
Be careful, Steve.
Later that evening at the Dancer Manufacturing Company, Colonel Steve Austin quietly slips in through an open vent.
My childhood dream come true. Free reign of a toy factory. Someone's coming. I'd better find a place to hide. There, behind those boxes. I gotta show you, Mr. Vasilich, this is a genuine article.
We are prepared to pay whatever amount is necessary to take possession of the machine, if and only if it performs to specifications.
That is the purpose of this test, to prove the capabilities of the molecular duplicator.
The power of such a unit is very great indeed. We could revolutionize the tactics of war.
Here we are, sir. Jerry, prepare the machine for use. You'll notice that a portable power source has been adapted to the duplicator so it can operate on any terrain.
Very impressive.
Now, watch over there. That toy army tank. Set the duplicator on 5, and... see? In a matter of seconds, a perfect duplicate of the original toy tank.
Amazing. But will it work with full-sized weapons?
Why, I don't know.
But I must know. I have been trusted with a great sum of money. I must not be swindled. I need to see an actual tank reproduced.
Then it will be arranged immediately.
What is that?
Attack dogs. I came here to frighten away intruders. I think we have one on the premises right now. Jerry, release the dogs.
That's my cue to exit. I hope I can outrun those dogs. Gotta find a way out of here.
There he is. Stop him.
There's the fence. I have to jump the fence. One, two, here goes. Made it. Now to report.
Early the following morning, Steve Austin meets Oscar at the City General Hospital.
How is Dr. Koenig?
Getting stronger, Steve. How did you make out last night?
I'll tell you when we see Koenig. I think there are a few things he can explain. I tell you this much, Oscar. He hasn't been idle in the last couple of years.
Something big?
Tops, Oscar. And a man by the name of Vasilich seems very interested in paying whatever it takes to own it.
Alexei Vasilich?
I have never seen him before.
Tall, heavy set, wears flashy clothing?
That's him. Who is he?
He's a weapons broker, the most powerful underground espionage agent in the Western Hemisphere. I've been trying to get my hands on him for years.
You may get your chance.
I hope so. Let's see what Dr. Koenig has to say. Dr. Koenig, this is Colonel Austin. There's something he would like to discuss with you.
It has to do with a molecular duplicator.
How did you know about that?
I saw it work last night. A man named Dancer.
That thief! Charlatan! He knew my invention worked all along. He was trying to cheat me.
What is this all about?
I retired from physics 10 years ago. I could no longer get myself involved in theories and equations. So I used a talent I had developed as a child, designing models and toys. I went to work for Mr. Dancer. He said I was good, but I couldn't turn out the quantity he needed to show a profit. So I invented the duplicator to reproduce my toys in quantity. I thought with the Christmas season upon us, he would be happy with the idea. But no, that scoundrel, he robbed me!
And now he plans to sell it to the highest bidder.
We have to stop him. What's his next move?
Vasilich didn't want to buy the machine on the basis of the demonstration with a miniature tank last night. Somehow Dancer is going to have to get his hands on the real thing and prove that the duplicator can work on a major scale.
That fool! That is impossible! It can only work with toys! I designed it for small objects!
Can you be sure that it will not work on a full-sized armored tank?
Well, no. I can't guarantee anything.
Steve, I think we'd better get moving. Where would Dancer get a tank?
I've been thinking about that, Oscar. The logical thing for him to do is to bring Vasilich to the tank.
But he can't get into a military base.
No, but the National Guard Armory has a tank platoon parked out back. I don't even think they have a sentry on duty.
Let's get over there. I'll call for reinforcements.
I don't think that's a good idea, Oscar. We can't afford to scare them off. We need both the duplicator and Vasilich.
What do you suggest?
Let me go in alone. Wait for my signal.
I'll wait, but only until I think you may need me. Deal?
Okay.
That evening at the National Guard Armory...
I'm sorry to inconvenience you this way, Mr. Vasilich, but it was more practical to bring you here.
I don't mind. It gives me a chance to look over your new armored weapons.
Well, then, I believe we are ready for the demonstration. Do you have the money?
$4 million. Will it be sufficient?
I don't know. This is a very expensive machine. Other POWs might pay more fantastic sums.
But at the present, I am the only one with the cash, Mr. Dancer. So let us stop playing games and proceed.
Yes, of course. Jerry, set up the molecular duplicator. Now we will see what this machine is truly capable of.
It worked! You have produced another tank!
You see, I told you it'd be worth the money. Now, if you're satisfied, I'll take the machine and the money.
Who's there?
Jerry! Get that guy!
Dancer, you will die for setting up this trap.
No, I swear, I didn't know! It's all over, Vasilich. We got a nice, cozy cell waiting for you. Steve, what happened? Vasilich shot Dancer and his accomplice, Jerry. He thought it was a trap.
What was that loud explosion?
That was Dancer's dream blowing up in his face.
You mean...
Dr. Koenig was right, Oscar. The machine doesn't work on large objects. The tank was reproduced, but the molecules couldn't stay together. It exploded into dust.
That pile of rubble is all that is left of a tank?
Well, Dr. Koenig, at least, will have his machine back.
I was hoping we were onto something that really worked.
Better luck next Christmas, Oscar. Maybe you should buy one of Koenig's toys.
So, yeah, that was the $6 Million Man Christmas Adventures. I have to say something about the $6 Million Man. I was not a big fan of that show.
Oh, yeah?
As a kid growing up. I don't know why. It seems like it would be right in my wheelhouse, you know? But it's, I don't know, somehow it just kind of missed for me. I think I had the Bigfoot doll, and I probably had the $6 Million Man doll or something.
Yeah.
But it just, I don't know, it just didn't resonate with me. And so when I was collecting Power Records, I didn't have any of these. And so even when I was doing all my research for the Power Records blog, I was aware of the one record, the LP, with the great Neil Adams cover.
Right, yeah.
And those four adventures. I had no idea that they had... that Power Records did so many $6 Million Man records. And not in addition to that one, they did a whole separate LP with four more new adventures. Then they did this Christmas LP, which is four more adventures. And then they re-released the one with the Neil Adams cover. They re-released that one with a different cover featuring photos from the show. And on top of all that, they did $6 Million Man 45s. So, like, he was huge as a Power Records star. He was bigger... sort of, than like even Superman or Spider-Man or Batman. Superman got one Christmas story.
Yeah.
Batman got one Christmas story. Spider-Man got no Christmas stories.
Yeah.
Superman the Man got four. So he must have been a big, big seller for Power Records. So
right.
That's sort of amazing to me. And this was a record I'd never heard up until a couple of weeks ago. And I mean, the stories are a lot of fun. What did you think of them?
Well, yeah, I really thought they were the album itself is a lot of fun, and you know I'm kind of in the same boat as you. I had the Steve Austin action figure. I don't know which version because they kept updating him, but I had him, and I know I had that Mission to Mars outfit because I remember that red dome of the astronaut helmet. But I don't know why. I just remember that. I was like I was really young. I remember the show being on. I watched it, but. In the years since, I haven't revisited that often. So it's like a nostalgic draw without really like having a whole lot like of specific memories of it. You know, it's almost like prehistory, you know, or something.
Right.
I thought the album was really, really, well done. And it, you know, the fact that they made so many, I mean, I think for a brief period of time of a few years, I mean, having this license was like printing money. I mean, in the days right before Star Wars, it was probably one of the top licenses to have. And then, of course, Kenner that had the $6 Million Man turn around and got Star Wars, so they were doing really well. As this went out, Star Wars came in. So, but, as far as the Power Records, the thing that really amazed me is the actor that plays Steve does a really good Lee Majors.
He does. He really tries to, like, replicate Lee Majors' sort of, you know, accent and tone of voice.
His Kentucky accent. He is a Kentucky, he's a fellow Kentuckian. So
okay, so that's a genuine sort of in your mind Kentucky accent?
Yeah, that, yes. Okay. but Lee Majors is from Kentucky, so.
All right.
Yeah, he's actually the actor is, yeah. But not that anybody needs to know that, but like me. But this guy, I mean, more so than probably any of the other Power Records, voice actors I've heard, he gets closer to the actor he's aping than about anybody else that I recall. So
yeah, I mean, like on the Planet of the Apes, they didn't really bother to do a Heston, you know, voice or anything like that. I mean, this is really the only time I could think of where they really are trying to replicate what you might have heard.
Right.
I get what you were saying about the $6 million man license to print money. That it's an interesting idea that you think about pre-Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know, Star Trek wasn't really much of anything. It was sort of dormant. And then Planet of the Apes had all that kind of heaviness to it.
Right.
So this has none of that. This has all the sci-fi stuff, but none of the heaviness. So this must have been a great thing to get as a toy license, because it's just fun. It's just a guy with crazy powers and he's a secret agent and, you know.
Yeah.
It is funny to me that nowhere on any of these adventures, not these four Christmas ones or none of the other ones, you never hear the na-na-na-na-na-na sound.
No, they have their own.
They never use it.
Yeah, it's like they have their own weird version of it.
Yeah.
They have a sound, but it's not the right sound, which is weird because they have the theme song. I mean, it's kind of their own version of the theme song, but they use the actual theme song in a kind of more of a disco, a disco-y version.
It's very funky.
It's like, George Clinton stopped by and did the $6 Million Man theme song or something, Parliament or something. I actually enjoyed it, but I kind of like the weird Power Records Batman theme too. So but you know, it's kind of funny because the first story, the Christmas light story, I could actually see that, you know, just from my memories of the show, see that maybe being an episode. You know, that felt more like a real story that they might do. It might be a little out of their budget sending him back into space. I don't know how they would have pulled that off, but the tone of it felt more like they might actually do that. And then of course the next one just kind of blows all that out of the water.
Yeah, I mean, when he's actually interacting with Santa and the elves are going on strike,
I love that because Santa's basically like, I'm hiring scabs.
Santa Claus Union Buster. He is
right.
He's not thinking of any crap. Yeah.
Yeah. That cracked me up. And you know, it was kind of funny when the guy comes in with the machine gun. At first you're thinking, oh my gosh, this guy just shot Santa Claus full of holes. You know, it's like as a kid, I can just imagine being traumatized for a few seconds until Santa speaks again, you know, because that was my first reaction to it. But there's even a joke in that one about Bionic Man dolls with Santa.
Yes.
You know, he's like, oh, I'd like to be interested in making Bionic Man dolls. I can't do that, sir. I got an exclusive license with Kenner Toys. I can't.
Yeah. I like you doing the guy doing.
It's like a bad Shatner impersonation, you know. It's me doing Kevin Pollak doing Shatner or something.
That's right, yeah.
But yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, yeah, they all, the first one, Christmas Lights, is much more serious, quote unquote.
Right.
And then the rest of it get a bit on the goofy side, you know what I mean? It's interesting to me that Christmas Lights kind of works in the religious angle.
Mm-hmm.
Of Christmas, which I always felt like, you know, for a kid's record, you're kind of playing with fire with that. You know, because you might be able to put that in a way that somebody might be like, it's a little, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
That's true.
You know.
Yeah. It's something you probably wouldn't see today. You know, you don't see that that much. But, you know, they're used to like the old, almost every DC Batman Christmas story that Denny O'Neill wrote, the Christmas star comes into it at some point.
That's true. That's absolutely true.
It's kind of interesting here. It was kind of a neat little angle to tie the Christmas star in with like a like a planet's dying stars. Like I was waiting for the message to be from Marlon Brando, you know, or something. My fun, you know.
Full of impersonations on this episode.
Bad ones, but
yeah, well.
Yeah, it's one thing, you know, the story was a lot more realistic, but the doctor going into space with Steve, just, you know, hopping in a rocket with him with no astronaut training was, but hey, you know, we accept that type of stuff in comics, and this is, you know, a close cousin.
Cindy's
so,
not on the episode.
So, yeah. Yeah, Cindy just walked by and said, Cindy's not in the episode, so. No logic bombs. In this
That's
episode.
Thank God. Yeah. This is a logic free episode.
Right. It was funny in the third story, the Kris Kringle caper, Steve's buying perfume for someone. And, you know, I was wondering, well, is he buying it for Jamie or is, you know, Lee Majors buying it for Farrah? You know,
they were a true power couple in the '70s. Those two.
Oh,
they really were. I mean, like both of them had hit shows, you know, they're like pretty amazing when you think about it.
Yeah,
it's funny, the Kris Kringle caper.
Yeah.
I give it to me here, I think it's the Christmas Carol caper, which is the Batman one from the Batman record.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, no, that's not it, but every time I see that title, I keep confusing the two of them.
Yeah, that one was kind of, Steve dresses up as Santa Claus, it's like they had to do it, you know, if you're going to do four Christmas stories, then in one of them the character's got to dress as Santa Claus. You know, I think it's just a rule. And I noticed when you put the album cover on the Power Records blog, you were thinking that Irv Novick was involved in the art.
It looks like Irv Novick.
Definitely does, and I wouldn't be surprised he didn't do the whole front and back. Really, I mean, but yeah, that Oscar Goldman on the. On the back is definitely Irv Novick, which I haven't seen enough $6 Million Man in years to know if the guy got Oscar down pretty good or not. He didn't sound out of character, but I don't think he hit the heights of the Lee Majors sound alike, but it worked, you know. So.
Yeah. I never watched the show, so I didn't know how much like Oscar went on the adventures with Steve, but in these records, he's a bigger character. He's in it a lot in all these stories.
Yeah, and you know, that's probably because he really needs somebody to talk to on a record, you know. So, I think he was definitely in pretty much every episode, but I don't know about him, you know, parachuting into danger with Steve. Maybe he's exploding briefcase from the... from the toy with him or whatever it was.
I was reading up on the show before we started, and that actor Richard Anderson had appeared as Oscar Goldman on The Bionic Woman,
right?
While $6 Million Man was on the air, and it was after Bionic Woman had moved from ABC to NBC, so he was the only guy. I think there was one other character on the show that appeared on two separate series on two different networks playing the same character.
Oh wow.
Because he was on NBC playing Oscar Goldman, and then he was on ABC playing Oscar Goldman, which, again, try and find that again, you know, modern TV. No chance.
That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't think of Oscar Goldman without thinking of the big deal they made about him in 40-Year-Old Virgin, you know, the action figure of
him. Yeah, right.
$6 Million Man's boss.
Why do you have that?
that's right. Well, when you brought up Bigfoot earlier, I couldn't help but think of the Venture Brothers, which I kind of wish I hadn't. What they did with Steve and Bigfoot was just really wrong. But
really? Did they? I've only seen like 10 minutes of that show. So
oh, really? Yeah, it's an early one. It's actually pretty good, but it's disturbing. So
oh, I see. Oh, I get it. Okay.
We won't go there. Sorry.
Okay.
Didn't mean to ruin anybody's childhood.
Yeah, good idea. So yeah, so that's the $6 Million Man Christmas album. It's really sad. It's amazing to me that he was so popular. He earned his own Christmas record. You know, the Superman couldn't do that. Spider-Man couldn't do that, but $6 Million Man could. That is remarkable. So, you know, Power Records obviously did quite well with old Steve. So it's cool stuff. It's cool stuff.
Yeah, so you know, it's kind of surprising that they didn't put together a Marvel Christmas record.
Yeah, I would love to have heard a Marvel Monsters. It'd be really disturbing. A Man-Thing Christmas. Who would not want to hear that?
Return of the Suicidal Clown just in time
exactly.
for Christmas.
Exactly. It's Santa that wants to kill himself and he goes out in the swamp. Perfect. Get Steve Gerber to write it. It'd be great. Yeah, I got to write that book someday. I got to find all this stuff out. Why didn't they do that, you know? I'm going to find all this stuff out.
Right.
So anyway, that's the $6 Million Christmas record. We hope everybody enjoyed those four adventures. We are now going to wrap up the show, as always we do, with listener feedback. We got a email from, or a message from Kyle Benning, and referring to the last episode, which was our More Monsters episode. And he said, I am relieved that the Power Records resists falling into the trap of calling the monster Frankenstein. I'm not sure when this phenomenon started taking hold, but I would guess that most of those good-for-nothing youngsters below the age of 20 nowadays don't realize that Frankenstein is the name of the doctor. The monster is nameless, going by either just monster or Frankenstein's monster. Obviously, the Power Records predates this trend of ignorance on the subject. Nowadays, whenever you see the monster, whether it's a Halloween costume, TV, or whatever, he's always just called Frankenstein. So we have a generation of kids who walk around believing this to be the case, that the monster is named Frankenstein, and this was apparently reanimated by a nameless doctor with a little short toady named Igor. God forbid they use the smartphone they've had since they were 8 years old to Google the damn thing and find out the correct name. Kyle's really mad about this.
He is. He's angry.
Of course, in the grand scheme of things, this is trivial, but it causes me to facepalm in disgust. Get off my lawn. Maybe the culprit of the social atrocity rests with the Frankenberry cereal. Maybe if they had called it Frankenberry's Monster Cereal, people would know the difference. I love that Kyle's willing to die on that hill. I just really appreciate how much he cares about that.
Yeah, actually, I wrote back to Kyle on that, and I wrote, I'll just read it. Kyle, I think the blame on Frankenstein being confused with the monster may go back to Universal. Frankenstein meets the Wolfman, has a granddaughter of the original Frankenstein, but it's clearly pointing toward the monster and the Wolfman meeting up. House of Frankenstein and Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein have no actual characters named Frankenstein, just the monster.
There you go.
I think it goes back pretty far.
Yep. Ange also, of the Supergirl blog, chimed in. He said, these two are very close to the creepy clown man thing records and how horrific they are. Seriously, between plunging fangs and slurping blood and hanged women, these are crazy. As an adult, I doubt I would let my own kids listen to these. I also know that if I'd heard these as a kid, I would have loved them. It was a simpler time.
Yeah, that's true. I actually wrote back to him on that, too. I said, Ange, I'm with you. As I said in the show, these acts of violence are in the comics themselves, but somehow seem much worse when dramatized. Not sure I'd hand any of these to my six-year-old, although I was much younger than that when I got my first Power Records. So, you know, it was kind of funny because, not to plug my own show, but,
go ahead. Plug
talking
it.
To our mutual buddy, Brian Heiler, on an episode recently. And, we were both kind of talking about the fact that we really can't, that the Power Records, unfortunately, are one thing that we really can't quite hook our kids into.
Right.
You know, if it's got the book with it, they'll listen to it. They'll listen along with the book and read the book as they listen. But if it's just a straight album, I lose them, you know, within like 5 minutes. Right. So, but, you know, me and Brian both, as we were talking, you know, he has his kids watching, you know, old Universal Monster movies just like me. He's got them watching, you know, Logan's Run TV show and stuff like that. So, hey, we're doing pretty good. If we lose them on Power Records, as much as it means to me, I'm not going to complain too much.
Yeah,
you know?
It can't be everything. You can't get them on everything.
Right.
We got a message from Frank, Diablo Frank. He says, barring a lapse in memory 30 years down the line, the monster Frankenstein was the most excellent Power Record of my childhood. The production is altogether a cut above the rest of the editions I've heard. I imagine the collection of voice actors looking at the script and thinking, finally, something to really sink your teeth into, to take seriously as a thespian. The passion for the material is manifest across the board, including the eerie music, sound effects, and the manipulation of the comic's material. There's usually at least one false note in these deals, but from the narration to the gravelly voice monster on through the bit players, it's all good. If they allotted space, the story was a solid adaptation, jam-packed with engaging incident, while Mike Ploog's art is rich with period feel and unnerving poses for the monster. Images I had not seen since grade school were so thoroughly seared into my memory that I recalled them vividly when bidden by the audio alone while listening on a freeway drive. This was especially true of the monster's battle with the bear, the wolf, and the closing pages of Hunting. I cannot recall another instance outside the original novel where I found Frankenstein as sympathetic. I certainly prefer the monster to be portrayed as such instead of the constant riffing on Karloff. The monster of Frankenstein was tops. And then he had, except the lettering.
Yeah.
Which was true, yeah.
Yeah, the giant Sharpie lettering.
Yeah, the giant Sharpie lettering, yeah. Pretty bad stuff. Tim Wallace sent a message, sent us an email and says, this was a blast. I love the classic monsters and hearing the monster, or I mean Power Records versions, just even got me more in the holiday spirit. Great episode, guys. Thank you, Tim. We got an email from Lindsay Werner, who introduced us to the Doctor Strange radio show now. Figured that all out. He says, dear Chris and Rob, I was really surprised you didn't bring up the fact that this is the second female werewolf that we've had. I got to say, I kind of liked that there are at least two women werewolves. Even though I had some plot issues with the werewolf episode, I guess they were trying to put too much in and ended up not making much sense. I really like the character of Jack Russell. The episode has kindled an interest in Werewolf by Night, if only to read the story the way it was intended. Thanks for the episode, Lindsay Werner.
That's, you know, definitely, we talked about how they basically chopped up two or three different comics
and
shoved them together. But yeah, she makes a good point because there was a female werewolf in the story of Dracula, Frankenstein and the Wolfman, or whatever that Power Records called, that's drawn by Neil Adams. And I remember we talked about there's no Wolfman in this. It's a Wolfwoman, or, you know, female exactly. werewolf. So yeah, that is a neat little wrinkle and something, you know, they didn't, I know Universal had that, movie, She-Wolf of London. But I've never seen it. I've got it on the Wolfman set, but I understand she's not, spoiler warning, she's not actually a werewolf. So
No, she's not. I've seen it. I saw it a long time ago. It's pretty tedious.
Yeah.
I mean, it's worth seeing if you're a fan just for completion, but it reminds me a lot of Werewolf of London. And it just, to me, it's like there's kind of some material there, but it just kind of plods along. So
All right.
And finally, we got an email about our audio commentary, Chris, for the Abbott Costello Meet Frankenstein. It was very nice. That was a pretty well-downloaded episode. It actually was downloaded more than the White Christmas one that we did, which is not surprising. But we got an email from Joseph Beru, a.k.a. Retcon, on Twitter and stuff. And he said, just wanted to drop a quick note to let you know I love the Abbott Costello commentary. It was great workday Halloween listening. It's rare to run across geeks our age that appreciate anything past the late 70s as far as pop culture is concerned. It usually goes a little something like this. Me, remember He-Man? Other guy. Oh, yeah, He-Man is great. Me, remember Arsenic Old Lace? Other guy. I don't know what that is, and I don't respect you anymore. Or something like that anyway. I usually block out most of my traumatic social interactions. Joseph was very complimentary about the job we did, which is really great to hear because we had a really fun time recording that.
Oh, yeah, that was a blast. I mean, anytime, you know, I mean, that's that. But he's got a point. You know, there is a certain... there's a certain cutoff with some people on stuff, and you've got there's a certain level of geekdom. You know, we've all got like He-Man and farther back in the 70s, you know, things like Star Wars and Star Trek and stuff. But if you go farther back, there's, you know, it's hard to find somebody that dips into that level, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes. So it is nice when he's like, oh, you do like that, you know. So the farther back you go, you know, it's like, oh, you're into, you know, late 1800s silent movies. Well, no, not really.
Okay, I've gone too far.
It's gone too far, yeah.
But yeah, we had a great time recording it, so I'm glad a bunch of people downloaded it. I'm glad, Joseph, thanks so much for letting us know that you liked it. We appreciate it, and we will do more.
Yes, definitely.
Chris and I like doing these too much, and we will do more, so...
Definitely.
And that is going to wrap up this episode of the Power Records podcast. As always, you can find me on AquamanShrine.net, on Facebook, Twitter, and what's the other one? Oh, Google Plus. You can find all the stuff about the Power Records on my blog, powerrecord.blogspot.com. And Chris, where can they find you?
They can find me at supermatescomic.blogspot.com. That's the homepage of the Supermates podcast that I do with my wife, Cindy. And you can also find us on iTunes.
Awesome. I love that show. Keep it up. Great show.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Awesome. And so until the next episode, drop the needle and turn the page.
Merry Christmas.
Come, Robin. Into the Batmobile and home.
The $6 billion band.
Santa, is there a back way out of this place?
Of course there is, Lee. But this is one Santa that's going out the front door.